When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everyone has an opinion, but he's got the Von Hessler Doctrine. Eric Von Hessler on WSB.
Welcome back. Hour two begins now. I'm Eric Von Hessler. I'm joined by Autumn Fisher, Jared Yamamoto, English Nick, and it is time for
Outrage Corner.
That's outrageous.
With English Nick.
All right, English Nick. What is outraging the planet? What stories have people outraged this
There week? Is a YouTube video that's causing outrage. Well, some people are outraged. This father had his son smash the Xbox on the front lawn after the son came home with bad grades.
And I saw this. This was the viral video of the week, and everybody had an opinion about this. And I know that a lot of people were saying this is a good father. And some look, he swears at the kid twice. Is that no longer a thing anymore? I mean, this is not a kid who's 17 years old. So,
how old is he?
I don't know.
He's like 10 years old.
Eight or nine, something like that. Yeah, 8, 10. So it reminds me of like the mother that everybody fell in love with in the middle of the Baltimore riots.
Yeah,
she was doing the right thing, but she was speaking to her son in ways that I don't know that makes you a great mother. So number one, we can't play the part on air where he's throwing the expletives around with this kid. So that's number one. You might look if the Xbox is causing trouble and the kid's getting bad grades, you take it away. But a good parent also gives the kid a way to get it back. And the way to get it back is to bring those grades up. And the Xbox is in the closet. You can't use it until you change your behavior. We have a little bit of this, DeMarco. Go ahead and play some of it.
It's not my fault. My teacher doesn't want to give it to me.
Let's go.
It's not my fault.
Now.
All right. It's not my fault.
Let's go.
It's not my fault that I didn't get him.
Let's go.
It's not my fault that I didn't get him, though.
Let's go. You've had 3 weeks, Jason. Let's go.
Sounds like Canada.
My teacher doesn't want to give it to me.
Let's go.
It's not my fault.
Now.
All right, so stop it right there.
He's
got a sledgehammer, and he's just telling him you got to break the Xbox.
Yeah.
And the kid's crying. Let me tell you something. That dad is a jerk. And I only use this word because it's all that I'm allowed to use live from Sherwood Forest on WSB Radio in Atlanta. This dad is a jerk. Beyond the way that he's acting there with his child, then to post it to YouTube, here's my kid crying. So you're going to humiliate your kids. Your kid's going to live with that for the when you're dead, that YouTube video is still going to be out there. Your kid doesn't have the power of Jennifer Lawrence. He's not going to be able to scrub the internet the way that she did. So, this guy is a complete jerk, and it reminds me of why I'm so hopeful that reincarnation is not a real thing. Because I do not want to be an 8-year-old again. I do not want to be a 10-year-old again. I do not want to be an 11-year-old again. Look, I did fine. I come from a bit of a broken family, but I was loved. I was not abused ritually or anything like that. But when I was a kid, I couldn't stand the fact that people who were bigger than me were always able to tell me where to go, what to do. Maybe I don't feel like getting in the car right now and driving. So, get up. That's the part of childhood that I couldn't stand. And when I hear that father who is, he may have a point, his kid needs to get better grades, but he's using it and he's enjoying the power that he has as a big person over a little person. You got to watch yourself if you're a parent. If you're a young parent and you're listening to me, of course you need to have discipline. Of course you need to be strict. But you have to check yourself and ask yourself always, am I using my place of power with this small person to make myself feel better? Because I can't hurl these epithets toward my boss. Right? Because he's got more power than I do. And you've got to watch it when you come home and it's time to spank your child.
Yeah.
And now, look, there are people who can do it who are very clinical. And this is just the punishment that I'm meting out for what you did. But that's rare. it's almost impossible not to also have a little bit of that guy at work and those people don't listen to me. And you have to be careful. I found this out myself, my 30-year-old when he was 5 years old. Even when I used to spank him, I would put one hand, I was really kind of hitting my hand. So I put one hand on him and then spank my hand because I thought that the sound, right,
was
going to be more of a thing. So I was trying from the very beginning. But I stopped with that when I realized that I did not, I personally did not have the ability to cut out all of the other frustrations in my life and just be cold and clinical and just mete out that much punishment.
That you weren't in control anymore.
Right. Well, or that I was just kind of taking it out of my kid for frustrations in my life. Mm-hmm. And I ask everyone who's a parent that's listening to this, ask yourself that question. I'm not condemning spanking a kid when they're wrong or whatever. That's a personal decision. But I do think parents have to ask themselves, is there really no frustration that's coming from other parts of your life, and here's a position of power. That man is exploiting his position
of
power.
It's mental torture, that boy.
And the kid is wrong, right? He said, it's not my fault, it's the teacher's fault, but he's a kid.
Yeah.
Okay? And my belief, I've been like this for years. When my kids were smaller, there were times where I emptied every toy out of the room. But they were still in the house, and there was still a way to get them back. And the way to get them back was to change your behavior. Another thing that I found works very well in raising children, when your kids are just out of control and not acting right, when they're just causing trouble for no reason, I would send my kids to their room, but they got to decide when they came out. At the point that you can come out here and be with the rest of us, and because they're in a mood. We all get in a mood, right?
Go chill out somewhere.
You go chill out. And I don't say that to them. Or I didn't say that to them. But let them govern. You go to the room and you decide when you come out. When you're ready to come out and join the rest of us and not cause trouble, leave your room. Take the toy away and say the way to get the toy back is to bring your grades up.
I think that's the problem, is that in this video and in his voice, you can hear that he's out of control. He's like, do it now! Yeah. You know what I mean? He needs to be the pillar and be very calm and say, maybe not smash the Xbox. That's a little bit violent and a little bit forceful or whatever.
By the way, you're teaching that kid how to parent when he gets older.
Yeah. Is to just destroy things kids love.
I tell you what, that kid's going to come back and give his dad an atomic wedgie at some point.
Yeah. It's all going to come back. All these stories are going to conflate at some point on the last day of the world.
He's going to crash a train into his...
But I would just ask that. I would ask that. I would ask any parent that's listening. I'm not coming out against spanking kids. I got to the point where I just didn't do it. With the first, and then didn't do it at all with the second, because I would rather teach and have the child
calm, collected, controlled.
What incentive does this kid have to bring his grades up at this point? He's just in trouble, and he did something wrong, and now he's smashed that. Dad's not going to go out and buy a new Xbox for him if the grades go up. You're trying to teach your children to do better and change their behavior. Give them incentives for that to happen. Now, don't take any crap. You know, don't allow them to get the upper position. You're the boss, and that needs to be known. But show your kids how you expect them to act by how they see you acting.
You know,
the worst thing
is that kid is scared to death of his dad.
Yes, absolutely. And
he lives in fear.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And that's,
you know, he's going to probably grow up and just be like, you know, he taught me a lot.
Yeah.
But then he reason can never get along with his friends, and his girlfriends are always breaking up with him.
I mean, I don't know where it all goes psychologically. This kid may grow up and just be a very strong person and blow it off and not have any problems.
My dad beat me up all the time. And look at me now, I'm the best.
You know, it's like the bad dog that gets scolded and beaten when it does something bad, but nothing happens when it's good.
Nothing happens when it's good, except it doesn't get beaten.
No.
And
no.
So then they... So you have
a dog that's behaving.
But not happy.
Right, but not happy.
And the same thing can happen with children. Yeah. Look, when you have kids, that is a big responsibility. And it takes a lot. And it takes more to teach your children how to behave properly than just to knock them down every time they don't. Again, there are parents who can do this right. I've seen there are parents who are, you know, okay, you get five smacks on the butt when you do that. But I believe, because of my own experience, that that's rare. I think if you really ask yourself and look in the mirror, you would find, if you were honest with yourself, that there are other frustrations from the day that you're taking out. And also, you know, my father... would psychologically torture us, because I remember I tell a lot of stories from 1969. A lot happened there when I was 5 years old. I was a stupid kid, and I took a crayon and I just started drawing on the walls like stupid kids do. My father was there, and he didn't spank me then. He was going to work. And he said, when I get home from work, then I'm going to spank you. So if he just spanked me then, I could have gone on with my day. But instead, he psychologically terrorized me for 8 hours.
How old were you?
I was like 5.
Oh.
And so all day long. And then, more than that, my old man knew how to really push it in because he'd come home and for 30 minutes he wouldn't say anything, so you'd start to believe that maybe he forgot. But he didn't forget. He was going for maximum effect. And so that's why, in a nutshell, I hope that reincarnation is not something that I ever have to deal with.
Right.
There you have it. A lot about me when I was 5 years old. 1969, you know, we went to the moon. And I was 5. And I have stories like you wouldn't believe. We got a couple more outrage stories when we return. All right, 78 degrees. Right now, as we speak, Channel 2's Brad Nitz says we're going to look for a high of 85 degrees. That's all going to work out as an 8 on your Mellish meter. So calibrate your personal home Mellish meter to ours so that we can stay in sync. This weather report brought to you by Shoemate, the official air conditioning of summer. What, are you doubting me that I have my own Mellish meter?
I've seen yours. I've seen it.
Yes, that should be something that is given out from WSB.
I wonder
promotions
if ever,
team, listen
exactly.
Up.
This should be Mellish meters.
Pocket meters. You know,
that's amazing.
That way, when my favorite host tells me what the Mellish meter is, I can have my own, and there you go.
There should be an app that's called the Mellish meter app. There you go, WSB.
Create it. Somebody create it. I think that's why Mellish is off for this last week or so. I think he's working on the software. So to come back with a bigger and better Mellish meter.
And Brad Nitz should have the Nitz meter.
It will not. You know, the new Mellish meter won't even fit the building. But it is accurate to, like, within atomic levels, it is accurate. So it's worth it. But I think they're going to have to store it in Turner Field or something once the Braves leave. They need to use that stadium for something.
That's what it's going
to be. I think that the all-new, bigger, better Mellish meter is the place for it. The all-new, bigger, better Mellish meter.
20 stories high in the old Turner Field.
Yes. That way everyone will know.
See,
as you're driving,
everywhere.
As you're dressed, it's an 8. It's an 8. Leave the umbrella at home.
That's right.
Yeah, so. But then again, I guess they want you to tune in and all that. So it kind of cannibalizes the product to have a large Mellish meter. So I guess my idea is going to be shot down in flames, as usual, in radio stations. We have another outrageous story from
the planet we
live on,
and
English
it
Nick.
Seems like the kids are suffering this week in Outrage Corner.
Yeah, we have a lot of stories about people and kids and getting it bad. This
outrage
week.
Over a game show in Cambodia. There's a 13-year-old
lady. Wait, stop. They have game shows in Cambodia?
Yes.
Well, it's been a long time since the Khmer Rouge. Things have to be working out better.
And you thought the Japanese had cornered the market.
Now, so they do like weird game shows like the Japanese do. Okay.
So this was a game show where a 13-year-old lady or girl who was originally born in the United States, Autumn Allen, she moved to Cambodia with her father when she was 6. She hadn't seen her mother in years. The Cambodian TV show said, come on, and you'll meet your mother for the first time in years.
Right.
When they bring out her mother.
Now, how old is she? 13?
13 years old.
She's 13 years old. She hadn't seen her mother
since she was six. 7 years.
So they sent an invitation.
Yeah.
We're going to do this game show thing where you're going to reunite with your birth mother. You're going to see her for the first time. And then what happened?
She's on stage, and they bring out her mother, and it's actually a dude in drag.
Now, this is in Cambodian, but I think we have a little audio from there. Let's see what we got there. That's the drum roll, the build up, right?
Yeah.
And then this.
That's the hosts, I think.
And now the audience laughs at this poor little girl because it's basically a drag queen.
Yeah.
And it's not her mother. And she starts crying.
Yeah, he comes out and kisses her on the cheek.
So you just hear the air just drop out of the room.
I don't even know what they're saying there.
I don't even.
Do they speak Cambodian? I don't even know what the native language is. Somebody look that up in the Google world. Is there something called Cambodian? Or
it's
right there.
Like you're breathing in words. It's true.
Give us a little more.
Perhaps you could translate.
It's called Khmer. It's spelled
Khmer.
Khmer.
Like Khmer Rouge. It must be close to the Vietnamese language.
Sure. Yeah, and they sound like they're swallowing their words.
Oh.
It's great.
Well,
I love it.
She could say this because she's a linguist. She made her living in languages. So
they have
it's not
a lot of
racist
words.
At all.
They have a lot of words
linguist.
That go like ah, nah. They cut, like, yeah. breathe in, and they have a, instead of their air going out for a sound, sometimes their air goes in.
My favorite thing of those languages, which is, by the way, I'm so dumb, my brain, I still can't wrap around the fact that we have different languages.
I know.
Like, that they're talking to each other, they're understanding each other, and I can't under, like, I might as well be a dog looking at it.
Yes.
It just kind of blows my mind. My,
so
my
varied,
favorite,
yeah.
I, and I understand it, but it's just weird to me. And the one that I love the most is, I think it's Chinese, where they'll do this thing where they add like an extra vowel, and it's almost like somebody like it's like that other thing that goes like, and I love it. It's my favorite sort of weird thing about a language. And then what weirds me out is if they hear me talking right now, like, they would make fun of me, because to them it sounds absolutely bizarre.
English sounds like this.
Not enough vowels.
All right, when we return, my misanthrope buddy from New York City is going to give us the stories. Welcome back. I am the aforementioned Eric Von Hessler. I am joined by Autumn Fisher, Jared Yamamoto, and English Nick. Hey, if it's Sunday, that means it's time to pick up your Sunday Atlanta Journal-Constitution. This week, a great story with new details in a controversial shooting of an unarmed black teenager by a white police officer in a small Georgia town. Pick up your Sunday Atlanta Constitution. It is time now. I'm always a little weirded out here when we go to New York City for this next one. But, you know, just go ahead and jump in. He's a misanthrope. He needs counseling, and he's our buddy. It's time for...
Stories from Studio B1 with Greg Russ.
Greg Russ, are you there? Yes. Yes, you are. How's your week going, Greg? Are you in a good mood or are you in a bad mood?
I'm in a fine mood. I'm still recovering from the food poisoning from India.
He went to India and he ended up sick. Most of the time you were there, you were basically sick.
Yeah, and still going on. And the people, you should go to the doctor. Why? So the doctor can say, go home and drink a lot of fluids, and then I spend some money? No, thanks.
How long does this take now? So you first got sick in India about a week ago, didn't you?
Yeah, I was supposed to join the show from India, but I was just lying in bed watching a Bar Rescue, actually, in India. They had Bar Rescue on TV.
Now, was it... Oh, that's right. The language is English, so I guess you can watch anything you want when you're in India.
Which is a very touching show. Like, it can make you cry. Sometimes these people are so grateful that their business has been saved, at least temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
It brings tears to the eyes.
Isn't it usually the case with those shows, though, that if you really check on these places, it's like is it
Gordon Ramsay?
Gordon Ramsay. I love those shows, Kitchen Nightmare. Yeah. He comes in and he turns the place around. But usually, if I'm interested in one of those shows and then I go online, because I'll see them as repeats, like they ran 3 years ago. So I'll go online, and almost always, once Ramsay leaves, and I would imagine it's true with this guy. What's his name? Tapper? What's the guy's name? John? I feel like the host of Bar Rescue, I don't know what his name is, but I feel like the same thing will be true when he leaves. Probably the bar goes under.
Well, you just look it up online. A Yelp review, for example, we'll say, this place is closed.
Yeah. I watched one of my favorite kitchen nightmares. Gordon Ramsay goes to some California restaurant, and the whole family is just a complete, you know, just completely dysfunctional. And
it's like every episode.
Well, I know, but this one, he really kind of turns it around, and it was a two-parter. My family, we were so into it. We went online, and one thing they didn't tell you in the show was that the father, who would be the host when you walked in the door, had apparently some of the worst halitosis. He's the terrible breath. They never mentioned it in the show, but can you imagine, is there anything worse than you walk into and the host, the very first person you come in contact with, has dragon breath, and it was never addressed in the show. I don't care how much you fix up the menu. If the host has dragon breath, you're going to go under. So you had that surreal experience. Are you getting better? I mean, it does seem like a long time, a week, to still be sick.
Yeah, I've been walking around with Pepto-Bismol in a brown paper bag on the streets, and this isn't even a lie. I just pull it out of my bag, and then I drink or take a couple sips.
And keep on walking, because that's the kind of person you are. Well, give us our first story from Studio B1.
The FBI computer expert briefly made a plane fly sideways. This is a report from the FBI.
I mentioned this a little bit earlier because we had a local story that didn't have these consequences that was about hacking. So tell us, what happened here?
A man, Chris Roberts, of I don't even want to give his company promotion.
All right, don't.
He's hacking in. He works at a tech company in Denver, and he hacks in through the in-flight entertainment system. And then from there, he logs in with the generic passwords, apparently haven't been changed, and then he can write some new code and override the system. So with this, in this case, he caused one of the engines to thrust more than the other, which caused the plane to kind of go sideways.
Now, if you take his word for it, he's not trying to kill people. He's trying to let people know that this is possible, right?
That's what he's saying, but I feel as though there's an air of superiority in doing it this way. Mm-hmm. Couldn't you just say, hey, this is the way it exists? Yeah. Sure you don't know that.
What I don't understand is somehow he seems to be going through the entertainment system and then able to crack. In my mind, the entertainment system on a plane should have a firewall between it and any other electronics that actually control the plane. So the real surprise to me is that he's able to use the entertainment system as some sort of entry system, but I guess it's all one big computer, right? It should be two different
computers.
On the plane,
right? It's got to be because it's sort of localized in this one place.
But
on
wouldn't
the plane.
You think that you could hack into the entertainment part but still have nothing to do with the engines?
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
this is the revelation to me. Am I getting this wrong, Greg?
That he's accessing it that way?
Yeah.
That is what's happening. Like I would agree with you. In that, why aren't they separate systems completely?
Yeah, why would they be built in such a way that they talk to each other at all? I mean, they should be on different software that just refuses
one's
to
one's on
speak.
Windows, one's on Mac.
Something. I mean, so one should be written in some software language and the other should be written in another software language where it's impossible to bridge one to the other. Now, I know nothing about what I'm talking about because I don't write code, but it seems to me that you should be able to put a firewall in between the entertainment system and the systems that actually control the plane, like autopilot and things like that. That's amazingly dangerous, but it makes you wonder if, you know, are we just all going to be susceptible? I mean, everything, the power grid is now on these sort of networks, our dams, water systems. Is it just going to be that forever a good hacker can cause massive trouble? I mean, this guy could have taken that plane down, right? I don't know. Could the pilots just turn that off and override? I'm hoping they could.
Yeah, I assume. And again, I don't know for sure, but you know, it's flying on autopilot for the most part. Mm-hmm. And then if they need to, the pilots can take control of the plane again.
It's one more reason for me not to fly.
Well, it's what it makes me think about the pilot with German wings.
Yeah.
If that were possible for autopilot just to override an actual pilot, I assume somewhere somebody would have had access to that plane's flight system, and then they could have basically rendered that guy useless, the pilot who was forcing the plane down.
Yeah, that's what I wondered about. It seems to me, but then we're talking about being even more on the network, which would expose you in other ways. But in terms of the German wings thing, I thought that there should be a way where people on the ground could basically just take over that plane electronically if they saw that a madman was trying to take it into the side of a mountain. Now, that being said, that's just going to put you more on that network, which is going to make you more exposed to hackers, I would imagine, if you're able, if the flight control people could take over the plane, well, then it's not going to be very long before someone on the ground. But I don't know. Is there anything that's secure, that's actually secure?
Uber. Uber secure.
I don't know. I heard that Uber, they if you use them a lot, apparently they can see what you're doing because your GPS is still on your phone, and like they've gotten in trouble at board meetings going, we know exactly where he is. He's five blocks away.
Well, you can see where they are on the different little cars.
Yeah, but that goes both ways.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I think that they've gotten in trouble for stuff like that. So you know what? I when it comes to privacy, I've just given up on that. I just assume everything that I look at, everything, whatever, it's all public record. But if I'm a passenger in a plane, I mean, I want somebody to explain this to me and tell me what's being done about it, because this guy may just be a jerk, but he may be the best friend we've had for doing something like this before people with other purposes got a hold of it.
And has he tried to go to the airlines specifically before he just goes to the media?
Well, Greg, explain that. He has tried to go to... He's been kind of a thorn in the side of the airlines for a little while now.
He tweeted at United Airlines saying that he could hack into the onboard computer settings, and then they wouldn't allow him on a plane. But as far as I've seen, that's the extent.
Oh, so they wouldn't allow him on the plane, and then he got on a plane and did it and showed it to him. So he's some kind of megalomaniacal kind of person, but he may be doing us a favor. Look, he could have done something pretty dangerous with that plane before the pilots were able to get control, and he didn't. He did a small thing, made it go sideways, and told people. I guess he has a piece of equipment he brings on the board with him. He puts it in his between his legs or something, or on the seat. Yeah.
The only thing that makes sense is that all the power on a plane goes through the APU.
Right.
So maybe he's able to take control of the APU.
I don't know what the APU is.
It's the basically the processing unit for the entire airplane. Right. So or the general
power
source.
So that's why the entertainment system would be there and the other electronics.
That's where they get their power, yeah.
Right.
So that's the only thing I can think of is that he's taking over the APU.
Well, whatever he's doing, we need to figure out a way to stop it because you and I aren't the only ones reading this story.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that people who would like to take planes down are reading that, and now they know, well, there's something here. Let's get one of our experts on it. So
it's James Bond stuff, man.
It
this
really
is James
is.
Bond stuff.
You can imagine a James Bond movie opening with this.
Yeah.
A guy, and he's got the thing.
And especially like in movies where computer things happen so quickly, the guy's just like,
and
he's
boom,
into those,
and
some going,
sort of and
thing.
Then, and then... James Bond has to do all kinds of physical things that a man that age could never possibly
standing
do in
on
real
top
life.
Of the plane.
In some of these James Bond movies lately, the opening scenes, which are always the greatest part of James Bond, the opening scenes. But I remember the opening scene of Spy Who Loved Me when I was 13, blew me away. And it was like he was skiing off of, and he had a parachute or something. But James Bond today defies gravity 17 times before the credits roll. It's almost like I can't even necessarily, I really feel like the James Bond movie got caught up in the Bourne conspiracy series.
Right.
It felt like, oh, we're losing out to that, and we have to get better than that with our action scenes.
Bourne was still somewhat realistic. Man, one of those Pierce Brosnan James Bond movies. He was surfing a tidal wave at a car door.
Yes.
I never bought Pierce Brosnan as Bond.
He was better than the guy before him.
Yeah.
The guy before him wasn't that good, but the movies themselves weren't that good. But I remember being in the theater, watching Spy Who Loves Me, and just being blown away by that opening. I mean, it totally took me by surprise. It was like, what? He goes, he skis off the edge of the thing, and then, the parachute. And I remember, like, that's real movie stuff. Like, I was, like, 12 or 13, and I was like, oh my God! Like, that was enough for me. Today, a 12-year-old watches that, and I'm like, yeah, I knew it was going to happen.
Why,
of course.
Where's the blood?
Yeah, why wouldn't you have a parachute? So, do we have time for one? Should we take a break or do one more story here?
Do one more.
Let's do one more story from Studio B1, Greg Ross.
All right, as we're talking about pilots and automation, Google, their self-driving car is set to hit the road this summer. not into this.
Now, I don't, you know, look, I'm not a Luddite. I'm for technology. And obviously, you know that the idea of self-driving cars is going to be safer because, did you know this? I did some reading, came across this somehow. Doctors who are part of the organ transplant system, you know, basically, I'll get to this with you later, English Nick, they love motorcycle riders. You need somebody to die young in order to harvest those organs, and there are doctors that are part of this are starting to have conferences about what are we going to do 20 years from now when all these self-driving cars are going around and we don't have the accidents that we all... So, these things
release
don't have steering. I wouldn't get in one. They don't have a steering wheel. I want to be able to override this thing. But that's just my natural fear. If I'm looking at the fact that organ doctors are starting to have conferences about a shortage of organs is going to happen once we get the self-driving car, that tells me things are going to be safer. We'll talk more about this and get another story or two from Studio B1 when we return. Love this song. Welcome back. Eric Von Hessler, Autumn Fisher, Jared Yamamoto, English Nick, Greg Russ is from Studio B1. Channel 2's Brad Nitz says a high of 85 degrees. He's going to peg that as an 8 on the Mellish meter. It's 80 degrees right now. This weather report brought to you by Shoemate, the official air conditioning of summer. Also, by the way, we only do this show for 2 hours a week, but we do have podcasts. We do two other podcasts. This show is available as a podcast as well. And when we leave here, we do something called The After Show, which is yet another podcast. All of those are available at ericvonline.com. ericvonline.com. Greg Russ, you still there? You got one more story from Studio B1. Yes, sir. Would that be a no? Would that be a yes or a no?
Oh, no.
I don't know where
Greg,
he went. We had him.
Go?
We had him. Everything's up. I haven't changed a thing over here. Well, perhaps
he's not
we'll,
live.
Well, maybe he's not
there. There he is.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What happened? Did you walk away?
No, that was my fault.
Okay, well.
I muted my microphone during the break, so I got a phone call, and I said, just in case, it's still on.
There you go. Well, that just goes to show that Greg Russ is not a professional, but we still love it. You have one more story for us.
Yes, Harriet Tubman wins poll for woman on $20 bill. There's a petition to replace Andrew Jackson, and then she's taking the lead, 33% of the vote.
You're saying that you're speaking so quickly, I don't even know if most people even really understood what you said. Slow down a little bit. Who is it now?
Harriet Tubman wins poll for woman on $20 bill.
Well, you know, in New York, those Yankees like to speak a little quickly, so you really got to pay attention.
Okay, I guess. So Harriet Tubman, famous abolitionist, she herself was an escaped slave, I believe,
yep,
and then helped other slaves. And there's been this movement to get a woman on the money. And even a cold-hearted person such as myself can't deny that there are women in the history of this country that deserve to be iconic and deserve to be on the money. I was worried that it would end up being someone who was kind of polarizing in her day, which is Eleanor Roosevelt. I didn't want it to be Eleanor Roosevelt just because there were people, you know, she was kind of a socialist, a little sort of, you know. Harriet Tubman, I think I would agree, is a good choice. First of all, you get somebody of color for the first time as well, and you get the first woman, and anybody who doesn't like Harriet Tubman is a jerk, quite frankly. So, and you know, Andrew Jackson, whatever. He's not exactly a president we all talk about that much anymore. I'm sure he was fine in his time, but it's time for Harriet Tubman. I'm all for it.
All right.
That was this episode of the Von Hessler Doctrine. We'll chat with you again on the next episode, which is next Sunday at 1 p.m. Remember, ericvonline.com to get all of your podcasts. We're going to leave here, leave the studio immediately, and start the Doctrine After Show. Thank you to everyone, but we'll see you again next time. I'm trying to fill time until we get off. I don't know what to say. That was it. That was the Von Hessler Doctrine. We'll chat with you again on the next Von Hessler Doctrine. But until then, I must insist that each and every one of you get off my lawn.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.